Hi guys, thanks for joining us. Welcome to the Three Pillars podcast with your host Griselda Barreto. Today we'll be speaking on the second pillar of writing. Today's guest is author S.M. Stevens. S.M. Stevens is the author of the hashtag MeToo novel, Horseshoes and Hand Grenades. A lifelong business writer who dabbled in creative writing on the side, Stevens found her opportunity to write fiction in earnest when she broke her pelvis in three places in a horseback riding fall. Her business career includes executive positions at Fortune 500 companies, small businesses, and nonprofit organizations. Her freelance writing career includes writing articles and columns published in the Boston Globe, Bay State Parent, Bay State Realtor, Strategic Communications Magazine, and Guitar and Bass Magazine. Stevens has also ghostwritten many articles. Hi, Sue. Welcome to the Three Pillars. How are you doing?
I am good, thank you. How are you?
Oh, I'm great. I'm happy to have you on the show. How is it over there? How's the weather there?
Well, I am in Florida on the east coast of the U.S., and it is a beautiful day today.
Oh, wow. And what's the temperature like?
We're in the mid-80s Fahrenheit.
Okay, that's... I'm not used to Fahrenheit, actually. I'm more used to Celsius.
No, and I've lived in Europe twice, and I still can't calculate between the two.
Really? I think it must be warm. I think it should be somewhere like 24, 25 degrees, right? I mean, it should be warm there.
I think that's a good guess. It's very warm,
yeah.
Yes.
Okay, yeah. It's pretty cold here. So I don't know what that is in Fahrenheit, but it's quite chilly over here. And it has been quite windy, you know, with the stormy weather and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So,
right.
Yeah.
Well, and I'm normally a resident in the northern U.S., so I'm down here for a few months feeling very lucky because all my friends and family are back in New England having lots of snow and cold weather.
Oh God, that's horrible. Well, you're lucky. Yeah. Have a great time there. So before we go any further, Sue, could I ask you to tell our listeners a little bit about you?
Sure. I'd love to. We've already ascertained I'm an American. I have also lived though in Europe twice, in Italy and in England. I am a writer for business and pleasure. So during the day, I pay the bills by marketing and doing public relations for mostly solar energy companies, which I'm passionate about because I think solar is very important. And then I'm also a fiction writer, and I have 5 books out. The newest one is called Horseshoes and Hand Grenades, and that was traditionally published, which is very exciting.
I was just going through your blog, and I was reading a bit about you, and you've had quite a rough past. Let's say you've had some medical conditions, and that's what actually got you into writing. Could you tell us about a little bit about what happened there and how you actually became a writer?
Sure. It was an interesting path, to be sure, and I don't recommend it. but it's called, I guess, making lemonade when life gives you lemons. So it's worked out well for me. What happened was first of all, I had always wanted to try writing fiction, but I, you know, had a full-time job and kids and dogs and, you know, a busy life and just had not found the time to do it for real. And then I broke my pelvis in 3 different places. I was thrown from my horse and I was on crutches for 3 whole months. And I wasn't allowed to drive the car, so I couldn't even go grocery shopping or take my kids to their activities. And I couldn't really do housework, which that part was okay. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't get to my job. So to keep myself from, you know, going insane, I decided to write a story for my daughter, who was then in 5th grade. So she was about 10 years old. And she loves animals and adventure. So I wrote a story called Shannon's Odyssey for her, which we have since self-published. And then, and that kind of gave me the bug. And I realized that I can put a whole novel length story together. So that was pretty exciting for me. But then a year later, almost a year exactly to the day after the riding accident, I was diagnosed with ovarian cancer. And I underwent about 6 months of treatment. I had surgery and then chemotherapy. And as anyone who's dealt with cancer knows, you know, chemo is very rough. It saps your energy and it continues beyond when the therapy ends. You're just exhausted for a long time. So again, I turned to writing, and I would sit there in the hospital infusion ward with, you know, an IV in my wrist, and I would type away at my laptop. And so that's when I wrote some books for my other daughter, who was a teenager who loves musical theater. And that's kind of what got me going. And with a few of those books under my belt, I realized I really want to keep doing this. So here I am today, about 10 years later, still writing.
Wow, amazing, amazing. And tell me, what is your writing process? Are you a spontaneous writer, or, you know, you're more organized and you schedule a time in the day that you write really well at? What's your process about?
Sure. So in terms of when I write, it's whenever I can. And I'm hoping to start my next manuscript soon, and I will schedule time in the morning to write. I might write at nighttime. So I'm very flexible. I think writing for, you know, 30 years as a business writer has made me very flexible in how and when I write. But my biggest bursts of creativity always seem to come at 3 in the morning. And 3 o'clock in the morning is not when your family wants to hear you clicking away at the computer, but it seems to work for me.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, at 3 in the morning, it's really calm and peaceful. And I think that's where you can actually concentrate and focus better, isn't it?
I think you're right. And early morning, like 5 o'clock, a friend of mine told me that that's when our brains are most receptive to outside influences and inspirations. And I think she might be right.
Yeah, probably. And how do you manage to get your creativity, you know, going? Are there things that you do? Are there things that you, music you listen to, or what helps you?
You know, I love a lot of the things that inspire people. I love animals. I love nature. I love being outside. I love music. But the best thing for me for inspiration is clearing my mind. So, you know, it's not even yoga, which I love. It's more just finding thinking time, you know, which is so important. And we have so little of it these days. So for me, it's finding a half an hour where I can just sit uninterrupted with my thoughts and think about what it is I want to write and how I want to accomplish it.
Wow. Okay. And tell me, how did you manage to get your first book published? Was it a difficult process, or did you consider self-publishing it, or what happened there?
Well, I've actually done both. So the first few books I mentioned that I initially wrote for my kids, those were self-published, and it's been a very interesting experience, and I'm glad that I did it. But the newest book, the adult one, is the first that has been traditionally published. And it's just very rewarding to have that vote of confidence from somebody in the industry. And the way I got that contract was very typical, really. It was traditional networking. Now, there were months and months and months of frustration and rejection and aggravation, like so many people go through. I mean, that is just a given when you're trying to publish something. But in the end, I had joined a writer's group, and the woman who ran that group knew somebody who had a book published by this small company, and one thing led to another, and that's how I found my publisher.
Okay. What's your thoughts on self-publishing versus traditional publishing? What do you think are the pros and cons of each of them?
Yeah, boy, there's a long answer to that question, right? I think self-publishing is very exciting, and small publishers are very exciting because they are getting a lot of books out there that normally wouldn't, but you have to be careful with it. I know too many people that have spent thousands of dollars to have somebody, you know, theoretically self-publish their novel, and it gets them nothing. And so if you write a story that you think is compelling and you have other people read it for you and they agree that it should be published, then by all means, look into self-publishing, but have somebody edit. If you don't have a friend that's a good editor, you know, you might have to pay somebody. But, you know, putting a bad story out there that's not well edited isn't going to help you. So I think you have to take it very seriously, whether it's self-publishing or traditionally being published. I'd also mention that blogs have changed the publishing industry in my mind. Because there are so many wonderful book bloggers out there today that support independent authors. And to me, this is creating a dynamic change in the business, because for years, traditional publishers called all the shots. They ruled everything. They decided what books you saw in the bookstore and which authors became successful. And there was nothing wrong with that, but it's a much more democratic process today, or maybe we should call it grassroots. It's sort of like what happened with music and YouTube, right? All of a sudden, musicians are being discovered on YouTube that otherwise no one would ever have known about. And some of them, of course, became household names. And I think that book bloggers are opening that door to authors, and it's very exciting. So a book could be self-published at first, and or a small press, and book bloggers, you know, promote it, and readers love it, and more, and it snowballs. And the next thing you know, those authors get a traditional publishing deal, and they become household names. So I love the book blog community.
But, you know, many authors, many self-published authors, they have this thought in mind that if you self-publish, it's really difficult to cross over into the traditional publishing market. What do you think about that? Is that true or not?
I think the majority of self-published authors will never get traditional contracts because that's just sheer numbers. You know, that's just percentages. But it does happen. And there are some famous examples. The one coming to mind is actually the 50 Shades of Grey books. Those were published first, and now they're traditional.
Yeah, true. But then you've got to have a huge hit on your hands, you know, and then probably you'd get a contract from a traditional publisher.
Right, exactly. It's definitely the rare few that make that step.
Let's come back to your first adult fiction novel, Horseshoes and Hand Grenades. It's also called the hashtag MeToo novel. Could you tell me why you chose to write about sexual harassment and abuse?
Sure. There were a few things that motivated me to write it, and I have a couple of things I hope to accomplish in writing it, and they're very intertwined. The catalyst for writing the book, honestly, was the Me Too movement and the Harvey Weinstein coverage. So quick background. Years ago, I actually wrote a manuscript that went nowhere. It was very bad. It was my very first, and it did not deserve to be seen by anybody. But it was about a woman who recovers memories of childhood incest and how she deals with it. And what got my attention through Me Too, besides just the general movement being important for women everywhere, what caught my attention was the questions that I watched people ask of these victims of sexual harassment in the workplace. And I was fascinated and horrified at the same time, because they were asking the same questions that they often ask of incest victims. They were, you know, these questions, we've all heard them. These are questions like, well, was it partly your fault? And why did you wait so long to speak up? But then again, if you're speaking up now, what's your ulterior motive? So these questions that they ask of victims of sexual crimes, they're infuriating, because when you think about it, nobody asks those same questions of victims of other types of crime, right? I mean, nobody says to a murder victim, an attempted murder victim, you know, was it partly your fault? And nobody asks a victim of burglary why they went to the police and reported the crime. So anyway, I decided that maybe a novel could help take people into the minds of victims and help answer those questions for them.
Mm-hmm. But you know, you're dealing with a pretty sensitive topic. It's controversial, very sensitive. How did you manage to portray that in your books? You know, how did you manage to detach yourself and create all that emotion and not let it affect you? What happened? Was it difficult writing about it, or was it easy for you?
Yes, writing about Me Too topics is definitely difficult at times. And I'll be honest, there were times I cried for my characters. But it was also, I felt, important work. And I just tried very hard to be honest to the experiences. And, you know, as a woman today, I've had some experiences similar to my characters, but not all of them. So sometimes I drew from things my, you know, friends had gone through, or even people I'd read about. And sometimes it's just using my own imagination to figure out what somebody would feel like in that situation. So I think that there's a responsibility that comes with it that is always in the back of my mind, you know, to do right by the story and by the characters. And I think that's one reason I chose to have two, because I wanted to show two different perspectives and two different mindsets, because every victim deals with this sort of thing differently. And it's not like there's one answer or one type of victim that applies to everybody.
But it's quite a difficult topic, because you actually, you know, so you've been writing young adult fiction, I think, and this is your first adult fiction novel, and you chose quite a controversial topic. So it must have been quite difficult.
It wasn't difficult for me to tell these stories, because I was so committed to getting the stories out there. But certainly writing passages about sexual crimes. Yes, that is absolutely difficult. I'm happy to say that in horseshoes and hand grenades, there's not a lot of that. I purposely did not address very severe incest, for example, and that was not to take the easy road. That was because I wanted to show that even victims of so-called minor abuse or less severe abuse are still impacted. So I guess in a way, when it came to those very tough scenes, I only had a few of them, and it, you know, was not as horrific, certainly, as some of the things that happen in real life.
And what has the early response been?
Oh, the feedback from friends and reviewers and people I don't know has been really wonderful. It's all anecdotal at this point. I don't even have my first sales statement yet, but I've heard wonderful stories. I'll share a few with you if you want.
Sure, go ahead.
Okay. So a bunch of people have said, and you'll see this on Amazon in the reviews, that they've been very angry and frustrated in reading the book. But then they also have feel hope at the end. And that's wonderful. I love to hear that. But a couple of very specific things have happened, which I'm so happy about. One reader told me that after she read the book, she put it down and she went and she told her husband about a workplace sexual harassment episode she had experienced years and years before and never told anybody. And then someone else said they had friends over for dinner, and the four of them all started talking about these things motivated by the book. And then yet another person, this may be my favorite because it's all about female power, is that somebody who read it said that she was so enthralled by the friendships depicted in the story that she contacted a lot of her best female friends afterwards to tell them how much they meant to her. So when your book can create action, you know, spur people to say things and do things that maybe they wouldn't have otherwise, I think that's a wonderful feedback for an author.
Of course, that's amazing. So you've actually created this effect. You know, you've got their emotions running by reading your story. That's amazing.
Yeah, and that's really so important to me. As I said, one of the reasons I wrote the book was to help women that have not experienced very severe abuse except that it mattered to them, right? Because let's face it, a lot of us women are very good at pushing things aside and saying it wasn't that bad, it didn't affect me, I don't have time to deal with it. But what happens with one of the characters in the story is that, you know, it does creep into her life and it does affect her in ways she wasn't expecting, and it's not until she accepts that what happened to her did matter that she's able to heal. And I'm hoping, I know there are so many women out there, I've heard from so many of them already, who have said, yep, that's me. I downplayed it. I said it didn't matter. But you know what? It's okay to say it did matter and I do matter.
And sometimes you're also scared of the backlash, you know, like, are they going to judge you? Are they going to judge what you were wearing? Are they going to judge your character because it happened? You know, there are many other things at play as well. And that's why many women prefer not to speak about it or to downplay it.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. And I try to convey that in the book. And it's not just outsiders questioning the victims. It's often the victims themselves.
Yeah. So I have to read the book as well. Tell me something else. Why did you choose to have two narrators?
That was a decision actually made by my daughter. I have two wonderful daughters and they're in their early 20s. And I mentioned before I had drafted a book about somebody recovering incest memories. And so when I watched the Me Too coverage and realized that a lot of those same questions were being asked of the workplace harassment victims, I decided that my story, I might want to include both of those in there to draw those parallels and to show that, you know, we treat victims of any sexual crime in these unfair ways. And so I was talking to my daughter, who's a very old soul at 22, and I said, would it be too much to have one character go through all of that in the story? And unfortunately, I think it does happen in real life, you know, probably more than we want to acknowledge. But she's the one who suggested having two narrators. She said dual narratives are so great for the reader. Go that route. So that's what I did.
And was it difficult? Because how did you manage to, you know, because you've got to think from two different aspects then, right? So how was it easy?
It's relatively easy because you're already writing a bunch of different characters. You know, you're already developing them and thinking about how they think and what they say and how they act. So it's really just another character, although there is a little pressure, you're right. You have to be very careful in building the voice. They really need to be two distinct voices so that somebody can pick the book up in the middle and know which person is speaking.
And is there a story behind the cover art of the book?
A little bit of a story. So these days, even the very big publishers go to their authors and say, find me some photos that represent your story that we might use on your cover. And I looked around for a while and couldn't find anything that encompassed all of it, you know, not only the anguish, but also the hope and the strength. And it's really hard to find that in one photo. So I turned to my daughter, who is an artist and recently graduated with an art degree, and said, why don't you give me some ideas? So we showed them to the publisher and they loved it. And that's where we got the cover illustration from, my daughter, Natalie Simone.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
Yes. Yes. So my daughter is the artist, and I just love the image because it shows everything. It shows all those conflicting emotions that go through a woman in these situations.
Yeah. And the different colors, right? Because I'm presuming the colors also represent emotions. You know, you have like the reds and the pinks and the blues there. And
yes, absolutely. It needed all those colors, right? It couldn't just be pink for woman. It couldn't just be red for anger or shame. You know, it couldn't just be blue. It needed all of those colors and emotions wrapped into it.
Amazing. So congratulations. You should tell her that because it's amazing and it's really nice. Is she going to do your other covers in the future as well?
Hopefully, that would be wonderful. She actually did do one other of my covers, the Shannon's Odyssey cover, which is the middle grade story.
Yeah.
So that was actually funny. This was a few years ago. She was still a student, and I decided to self-publish that book. And my friends and family were bugging me to have a pretty cover made. So I told Natalie that I would pay her $50 to make me a cover. Well, what she came back with was so detailed and perfect that I said, I think I have to pay you more.
Amazing. She could actually do it professionally. Because, yeah. You know, many authors that publish themselves, they're looking for people that do cover art and things like that. So she'd do great there.
Yes. Yeah. She's available for hire.
Oh, great. tell me something else. What about the name of the book? You know, it doesn't, you know, when I look at horseshoes and hand grenades, I wouldn't say that it would be about sexual harassment or anything like that. Why did you come up with that name? And how did you come up with that name?
Sure. Well, first, let me ask you a question, because I don't know if there's a saying behind the title, and I don't know if it's universal or not. The saying is that almost only counts in horseshoes and hand grenades. Have you ever heard that?
I've never heard that.
Okay, it might be an English, you know, I think it has English background, so I'm not sure if it translates globally, but that is the saying. And also some people use a variation. They say close only counts in horseshoes and hand grenades. So the concept of the saying, of course, is that in horseshoes, if you almost get a ringer, you still get points in that game. And if somebody throws a hand grenade at you and they miss, well, unfortunately, you're probably still going to be hurt very badly because it's a hand grenade. And so the saying is used a lot, usually, you know, tongue in cheek, just to say, hey, you know, that you didn't get this or you didn't do that, because almost only counts in horseshoes and hand grenades. So what I'm doing in the novel is I'm turning that on its head, really, because my main message is that almost does count in more than horseshoes and hand grenades. And specifically, I'm referring to matters of incest and harassment. Again, I go back to the character Shelby, who doesn't think that her minor abuse affected her. And the main message of the book is that almost does count. And even if you know 50 other women that had worse experiences than you had, that doesn't mean that your experience is invalid. You know, it does count, and it is valid, and you deserve to heal.
Yeah. Okay. That makes sense now. Now I understand it better. What are you working on for the moment?
Well, I am really itching to get going on my next manuscript, and I hope within a month to be doing that. As you can imagine, promoting the existing novel takes a lot of time, although it's been very fun. But I'm hoping to get going soon. I have so many themes in mind, though. Honestly, I haven't settled on one. There were so many big issues facing our global society these days, you know, from immigration to gender politics and gender identity and mental health issues. So I expect I'll probably be digging into one of those next.
And is it also going to be adult fiction then? Or would it be another genre completely?
No, I do like hopping genres, I have to say. And I think that authors should be given more freedom to do that. But no, I will definitely stick with adult fiction for a while. My kids are grown. They don't need children's fiction right now, but maybe someday I'll write more children's fiction for my grandkids.
So you're actually writing because of your family. You know, you're looking at the age they are. You know, you wrote your first few books. Now they're older. So you've written a bit of an older book. And is that how it's going to go?
Yeah, I loosely follow that pattern, but I am in seriousness, you know, adult fiction is my love, and I hope to do a lot more of it.
Because I think it's more wider, right? And you have more choices and things, and I'd understand that. But you could also try nonfiction, you know?
Right. No, nonfiction is definitely a possibility for me because I have been writing nonfiction for work all my life. You know, so I have written, you know, many articles and things over the years, and I have seriously considered writing about nonfiction at some point.
Yeah, that would be good for you too, I think. Well, let's see. Who knows? You know, fingers crossed. All right. When I say healing through creativity, what does that tell you? What does that, you know, what does that mean to you?
I think the concept of healing through creativity is very, very important in society. It makes me think of children, especially, who have been through something traumatic, and they're, you know, and therapists will try to get them to express what they're feeling through art, for example. I think that has always been there, that creativity is an outlet for our emotions and coming to terms with things. There's actually a scene in Horseshoes and Hand Grenades when Shelby's therapist encourages her to write poems to try to, you know, get to the root of what she's feeling or maybe not feeling. And so I think that's very important. And frankly, for me as an author, even though I didn't experience everything the characters did, in some strange way, it was cathartic to release that through the writing.
But also while you were sick, right? Remember, you found your healing through writing, wasn't it?
Yes, I absolutely did. And it's not just because it was a distraction, which it was a welcome distraction from chemotherapy treatments, but it was more than that. There's something incredibly rewarding about shaping a story that is hopefully going to entertain people, but also be thought-provoking.
Yeah. And how do you get your books reviewed? I mean, you know, once you have your manuscript, do you use a lot of beta readers, or, you know, do you run the books through friends of yours? How do you get feedback on it?
Yes, all of those things. I was very lucky to have a core group of solid friends that have writing backgrounds in one way or another. In their careers, and they were so helpful to me. I cannot stress the importance of the early feedback like that. And then I was lucky to have a professional editor through the publisher too.
Right. And what about writing block? Have you already had that? And how did you manage to get out of it?
I don't suffer too much from writer's block once I've started on a story. And I have a little tip, to be honest, that has always served me well. And I think, again, this might go back to the business writing, but what I've learned when I'm writing fiction is to never leave my desk without a plan for what's next. So sometimes I really, really want to keep writing this chapter because I love it and I know what I'm going to do with it, but I don't know what's coming next. So I might leave that chapter partway through so that when I come back in the morning, I'm right back into it and I know exactly what I want to accomplish. And then it just sort of flows better. So I try to avoid sitting down not knowing what's coming next.
So you have like a plan of action, the next thing that you're going to do, and that keeps the flow going, kind of thing.
Right. So that little tip is my savior. You know, I think the bigger writer's block happens when you really don't know what it is you want to say. And I think in that case, the only solution is that thinking time that I love so much, where you can just find a quiet space and just let your thoughts go free range until you figure out what it is you're trying to accomplish.
And then how does the story start with you? Does it start with characters, or does it start with an issue, or does it start with, you know, just some kind of thing that, you know, an image that you have in front of your mind? How do you start your story?
I usually start my stories with the message or the theme. The first thing I figure is, what is it I'm trying to accomplish here? Because, you know, writing a story just for the sake of it, there's nothing wrong with that. And people might enjoy reading it, but I really prefer my fiction to have some kind of message to it. And I don't mean preaching. I don't mean, you know, shoving something down people's throats, but I just mean raising examples, you know, through, you know, characters or situations that are thought-provoking that make people question something about life. So for me, it starts from there. And then once I decide what it is I'm trying to convey, then I figure out what's the best way to get there, you know, what types of characters and what types of situations should they find themselves in.
And then you start writing your chapters first, and then you continue with your stories, like you have a kind of a storyboard, or, you know, is it more organized or not?
Well, I tried to start organized, but it never lasts long because the stories do kind of take over. So I am very much a mixture of the, you know, the fly-by-your-pants author and the planner who blocks things out on a storyboard. So I typically do have a rough outline of how I think the scenes will go, but I don't know how I'm going to connect them all. And then I'll start to write. And I will then go back and forth between writing and plotting. So it's very iterative. So I might, you know, write a third of the book and then go back to it and, you know, fix some things based on where it's going to go next. The only thing that saves me, you know, so when you can have a lot of plot lines going at once. I had, you know, five or six different things and horseshoes and hand grenades, and those little colored post-its are what saved me. Because I would, you know, use all yellow for one plot line and all green for another one. And then I could try to, you know, put them all together in a way that made sense. So that's my very low tech version of storyboarding.
Wow. Okay. Well, that's your way of doing it. You know, there's a bit of a, how do they say that? There's a something in the chaos. There's a,
yes. I know what you're talking about. I can't think.
There's a method to the madness or something like that.
Madness and getting order from chaos.
Oh yeah, that's it. Well, how do you see the future, Sue?
Oh, the future for me as an author, or the future of the world as we know it?
Both of them.
For me as an author, I really hope that this is the start of a more formal writing career. I really hope that, you know, people enjoy the book and take something away from it. And most of all, I hope it helps a lot of women, you know, maybe move on a bit and heal a bit with something that's been in the back of their minds for years. So my hope is that, yes, so that I get to keep writing and people keep reading and enjoying it. But if you want to ask me how I see the future of the world, well, we have a lot of challenges. We all know that. But I think if I try to answer it in the context of the novel of Horseshoes and Hand Grenades, I think the Me Too movement is what we're talking about. And it's a very, very important societal movement that nobody knows where it's going to take us. And there have been so many similar movements in the past that haven't really accomplished what people hope them to. So I'm very fascinated and I'm very curious to watch this and see if it really does deliver the change that everybody hopes it will.
Yeah, I hope so too. What about, do you read a lot? And if you do, could you tell us writers or books that have played a key role on your writing journey as an author?
Sure. So I love to read, obviously. Always have since I was a kid. You know, my favorite thing to do was hole up in our attic with a bunch of books and some apples and just sit there all day. But I don't have particular authors that I've said, you know, I've learned something from them. I think I learn from all of them. I think I try to learn from everything I read, and that means the bad stuff as well as the good stuff, right? Sometimes it's easier to spot things you don't want to do than things that you do want to do. So every book that I read, I hopefully take something away from that affects my writing down the road. But in terms of favorite authors, there's just so many that I just would love to be able to write like them someday, and I aspire to that. Two that spring to mind are completely different, but two of my favorite authors are Toni Morrison and Kurt Vonnegut. And in my mind, they couldn't be more different. You know, Kurt Vonnegut is the king of, or was the king of concision, you know, conveying a story through as few words as possible. And Toni Morrison, to me, just sings with words. You know, she strings words together in a way that is so beautiful that, you know, sometimes I stop when I'm reading her work just to reread something because the way it sounded in my head was so beautiful. So I think they do two very different things with language. And like I said, I can only aspire to be somewhat close to them in their achievements someday.
And is there some book that you're reading currently?
Oh, I'm constantly reading them. I just finished reading The Good Braider by Terry Ferris. And that's a phenomenal book. That was quite popular a few years back, and I just read it for the first time. Are you familiar with it?
No, I haven't actually, but I am going to read it now that you mention it.
Mm. Yeah, The Good Braider is the story of a teenager who escapes the war in Sudan and travels up through Egypt and then eventually to the United States. And she actually lands in Portland, Maine, which is where I'm from. So that part interested me. But it's told, it's technically considered young adult, but anybody can read it. And it's told in verse. And I found that sparse, lyrical style really fitting for the voice of a teenager who has been so affected by war crimes. So it's a wonderful book. And I'm personally so excited because through a mutual friend, I hope to meet her in the spring. We'll both be speaking at an author series that's being put together. Yes, I'm very excited.
Yeah, you should tell us about what happens there. Oh, it's lovely. It's amazing. Well, good luck there. What about, give us some of your advice to aspiring writers.
Well, the most common advice for aspiring writers is always you really have to love it. You have to not be able to live without writing, because if it doesn't consume you, it's not worth doing. And I think the reason so many people say that is because you're probably never going to get rich doing it, right? This is, you know, not a profession for those who want to become millionaires. It's only a few that actually make a lot of money from it. So the first thing is you have to love it. It has to be in your blood. You have to really, really want to write. And the other piece of advice I would offer, which has been very relevant to me, is that you do have to learn the craft. And, you know, the great thing is there's all kinds of free advice out there on the internet about how to shape stories, but nothing beats working with somebody that's done it before. And I attended a conference, it was 3 days, some years ago, with an early manuscript. And we worked in very small groups, 8 people, with a published author. And the feedback I got and what I learned about crafting a story in that workshop was unreplaced. I mean, you couldn't replace it. That is what helped me get to where I am today. So whatever method somebody might choose, I just highly recommend you've got to learn the craft.
And how could the listeners get to a workshop like that? Where could they find more information on attending a workshop like that?
That's a great question, and I wish I could answer it with specifics. The workshop that I attended is sadly no longer done. I'm not sure why. I think the organizers did it for a long time and then just decided to go in a new direction. They might have been tired after doing it for years. But I know there are plenty of strong writer workshops out there, and they come in all different shapes and sizes, right? Some are a weekend, some are a week, some are longer. So I think the main thing is to make sure that you're in one where you're going to get somewhat personalized attention. So you can really work with somebody. And the best ones, honestly, are those where you have to submit a sample to get accepted. Because if you can't get accepted based on a sample, then maybe you're not ready for that intensive workshop.
Oh, that's a good advice. Yeah, thank you. So it was lovely talking to you. I'm going to come to my last question to you. How can our listeners contact you or find your books?
My books, including Horseshoes and Hand Grenades, are available on, you know, Amazon.fr, I think, is the one most Belgians use. Any Amazon site will have Horseshoes and Hand Grenades. And also, you can get information on anything to do with this, including reading my blog posts, which are about the book sometimes, but sometimes they're about women's issues. I cover a wide range of stuff. And that is all on my website. And the address for that is authorsmstevens.com. And from my website, you can get to the blog, obviously, and you can also get to any of my social media. I'm quite active on Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, and Instagram, and would love to have some followers from your show.
Oh, that's great. Well, thank you so much. I'm going to put all this information, links to your Facebook profile and everything, in the description of this episode, so people can just click and reach you. Mm-hmm. And do you have any more information that you'd like to share with us?
My last message is just to remember that almost does count, right? So whatever it is in your life that might be lurking in the background, it's okay to bring it out in the open and acknowledge it and see how it affected you and see if you can heal.
Thank you so much, Sue. It was lovely having you on the show. And I wish you all the best with your current book and with your future books as well. And we should keep in touch.
Oh, Prashelda, I would love that. That was a lot of fun. And I'm looking forward to seeing some of your stuff too. I know you've written a few books, so I hope to look into those.
Oh, thank you very much. Well, Sue, have a lovely evening then, and speak to you soon. Bye, Sue.
Thanks, Prashelda. Bye-bye.
Thank you for joining us on The Three Pillars. See you next week, and make it awesome.